My name is Judy Essman, and we're going to be talking about personal issues and food. Personal issues with food. All right. I guess I'd like to tell you why I even thought of this, because when I came here, told and I had wasn't on my mind to do any kind of presentation or get involved in the discussion that I initiated, but when Ray had told me that he that there had been some talk about sex roles and that when World Hunger was also on the agenda for the winter program, I guess it planted a little seed. And then when I went to dinner or lunch, one or the other, the first time, all of a sudden I thought, how am I going to eat here? Now that I'm here and I see all this food, what's my relationship to this food going to be? And then I thought, wow, if you all are talking about changing sex roles and you're also talking about world hunger, are you talking about how you personally feel about food? Because that was one of the first things that came to my mind. And I guess I thought about it a little more, and then finally went to Janet and asked her if anybody would be interested in talking about that, and she thought that they would, so that's how I've come to do this. So, what I thought I would say, now that I... What happened? She almost sat on the mouse track. Yeah.
Didn't
mean to
be
pushing.
Right.
Save you.
What's the mouse's role?
Right. Sorry, you can sit here if you want. Trying to trap me, huh? I work as a college counselor, and I have done that for 13 years in various colleges. And one thing I've been noticing in the last year particularly, but maybe the last 18 months, is an increasing number of young women coming in to talk about their preoccupations with food. They find themselves eating in a way that they don't feel like they can control, and they feel they are living in a world where food is more on their mind than anything. And I hadn't heard about that before. So I started to talk more with them, and I started to read more about it, and the more I did that, the more I found out that there were many people who had preoccupations with food that involved not only food, but how to eat, body size and shape and weight. Hi.
Hi.
For some of those people, that's an ongoing and agonizing problem. I'm not going to talk a lot about that unless, if you would want me to say more about that some other time, I'd be glad to do it. Those people, I think, represent the end of the eating continuum, sort of, where their eating patterns become the meaning of their life. And those people now are called people with eating disorders, and anorexia is a term for one disorder, bulimia is a term for another disorder. Would you like me to define those, do you feel like you know what? Both of the disorders are characterized by extreme preoccupation with food and body image. The person who suffers an anorexic disorder believes no matter how she looks, usually it's a woman, but it can be a man, no matter how she looks, that she is too fat and tries to achieve thinness to the point of threatening her life through starvation, denying food, not taking in food. It's often characterized too by a compulsive exercising 4 hours a day, for instance, and then eating nothing or very little, a half a banana and a carrot a day or something like that. The weight loss is dramatic. When a person has lost 25% of their original body weight, they're endangering their life, and that happens. Karen Carpenter died from that disorder last year. Her heart muscle just weakened, I guess, and she died from it. Bulimia is characterized also by extreme preoccupation with food. And by preoccupation, I mean thinking all the time about food. When to eat, what to eat, where to eat, how to prepare the food. The food for a person with a bulimic tendency is eaten, and it's eaten in large quantities over a limited period of time, and usually in secret. It's called a binge because a person may eat hundreds of dollars worth of food in one sitting. The binge is usually terminated by extreme hunger or stomach ache. But the classic bulimia then has not only the binge, but it has a purging, getting rid of the food, and that usually involves either vomiting or laxative use. That too is health-threatening over a long period of time. The binges can occur three times a day, for instance, and so there's a lot of planning about that. I'm talking about the extreme situations now, and there can be a lot of health problems, teeth rotting and problems with the throat because of the vomiting and bowel and intestinal problems with the laxative use and that kind of thing. So that person is usually of normal body weight. A bulimic looks of normal body weight. An anorexic begins to look like she's suffering very quick weight loss and then looks grossly underweight and finally sort of skeletal. I think those disorders are very difficult to turn around by oneself, and so it's important that someone intervene to help a person get out of that kind of syndrome. And so it's an important thing to know about for yourself, if you find yourself having those tendencies, to get some help, or if you know someone in your family, to try to come to understand what to do about that.
Did you say a bulimic would normally maintain their body weight?
Yeah, there's a weight loss, maybe 10 to 15 pounds in the beginning, because the food is taken in but isn't really digested because it's usually vomited out. And there's a weight loss, but over time the weight creeps back up to the original weight. It doesn't really, it's neither one of them are effective diets because they are too dangerous and they don't really do the trick. Now, those are extremes. There are, what I'm finding, if that's one extreme, and what I would call normal eating, and I'm just defining this myself, I would say normal eating is at the other end of the continuum, and that would be eating, thinking about food when a person is hungry, eating when hungry, and then stopping when full. If that's a definition, I'd say that's the other end of the continuum, and probably has as small a number of people in that as we do have at the other end, where we have the anorexics and bulimics, and that all the rest of us are in here. I think most people suffer from some kind of irrational eating pattern from time to time in their life. I didn't mean to look at you.
I was just
going to
say the last 4 or 5 people that have walked in have been
food. I get one a month.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Celebration.
Yes, congratulations. Enjoy.
Are you hungry?
Big day.
Just
maybe those of us that don't have those irrational patterns can think about a time like Thanksgiving dinner, traditional in this society, where you know there's going to be this feast of food. And most of us think about that ahead of time. Oh, there's going to be all this food. How am I going to handle this? Well, maybe I'll not eat so much today so I can eat a lot tomorrow. Or I'll be sure and diet a little bit after Thanksgiving. Or I'll go ahead and eat anything I want. You know, we think about it ahead of time. And then Thanksgiving comes, and we give ourselves permission to eat too much, for instance. And then We get stomach ache, and we all sit there and say, well, it was that last drumstick. It just didn't have that drumstick. Or the second piece of pie, you know, I shouldn't have had that, or whatever. You know, it's like we notice. We kind of overdid it, and we're uncomfortable, and then we sort of down ourselves a little bit, but then we give ourselves permission and that kind of thing. So there's some distress. In other words, we feel some kind of problem about food. Well, that kind of thing that some of us only feel on times like that, I think, is down here on this end. And many more of us, I think, worry about food a lot more often than just that. And my thought is, gee, you know, in a world that's hungry, how do we give ourselves permission to talk about that? What I'm finding in my counseling is that people's eating patterns, if they think they're irrational, often feel really guilty about them, and so they don't talk about them, and they suffer in silence. But the problem doesn't get any better, and people may spend their whole lives trying to control their weight, trying to control their eating, and never quite understand what that's all about, and not really feel free to talk about it, other than to say, gee, I want to lose weight, and everybody sort of pats them on the back and say, yeah, go ahead and do your diet, and that's that. But what the person's relationship to food is, I think, is much, much more significant and a much more difficult thing to talk about. So what I wanted to do tonight was introduce that, like I just did, and then mention to you a couple of things that I've been doing with people, and the kinds of things that I hear emerging as they talk, and throw those things out to you, and then see if we could have a conversation about what those things mean to you. So, it seems to me in my talk with almost any of the people who are worried about food, and that's people who are of normal weight or not, they seem to have two things that are troublesome to them. And one of them is their body size. And that is their relationship to fat and their relationship to thin. What those words mean for them. Well, how they feel about themselves when they think they're fat. How they feel about themselves when they think they're thin. And all of the societal things come into that, and the sex stereotyping comes into that, all kinds of things. We can talk a lot more about that, but that seems to really emerge for people. The other thing that people talk about is how they eat. And I find that people who have irrational eating patterns really need to talk out loud about how they eat. I do this. I think about this all the time. I think about strawberry shortcakes. I think about it. I wake up in the morning and I think about it until I eat it in dinner. I love sirloin steak. I just love it. I hate myself. I start out the day and I hope it's going to be a good day. And by the end of the day and I've eaten the way I've eaten, I hate myself for it. And it happens every single day. So I think people need to begin to start to talk out loud about their eating patterns. And that involves a lot of different approaches, which I wanted to mention. Let me just back on this page. I'm not talking a lot about the relationship with sex role stereotyping and stuff. If you want to talk about that later, we can. The things about eating patterns that I think can be helpful for people to talk about are their history of their eating. For instance, what was it like as a young person, as a child, to grow up in your households, and how did you eat? What was the family's relationship to food? What did people say about it? How did they treat it? What were mealtimes like? How involved was the family in how we ate? I think there's a lot of information there about early beginnings of behavior patterns later that are hard to break. And when we understand sometimes when they began and who began them, it's easier to break them now. They don't feel like something we were born with. A question that arises about fat and thin is that there are sexual stereotypes and sexism creeps in about body image and what is the current vogue body for females and for males now. And if you're not in vogue, what are you? And women, I think, what?
Out of vogue.
Out of vogue. I think in our culture it still feels like, and I think it's probably still true, on one level anyway, that a woman's highest value, her highest currency in the culture is how she looks. And I think women these days are trying to confront that and say, no, that's not true, but we can confront it, but we still get hit with it. Mm-hmm. And so it hurts. I also want to say that fat and thin can serve purposes for us. And, that are important to know about, and I'll talk about that. Let me just sum up, and then we'll do some talking. One thing that seems to characterize common feelings for people who have some personal conflicts around food and eating and weight seems to be that, one, they feel out of control around food. They're not. They don't feel like they're, when they're in the presence of food, they don't feel in control of themselves as much as they want. I'm thinking this. And I guess my contention is that if that's the case for many people, or even if it's just the case for some people, it's very hard, I think, then to make a decision about how we are going to relate to a hungry world if we have our own issues around food that we don't know how to deal with, other than coming down and just feeling guilty about our eating patterns and then trying to act out of guilt. But I don't think that's a very clean way to decide how to think about world hunger. So I'd like to contemplate a couple of things. Let me before I start, do you have any questions or thoughts about just what I've said so far?
I think that most of our eating patterns and most of the ways that we feel about eating right now are the way we were brought up. We're in at least Scandinavian waspish societies. Food is a social thing as much as eating three meals a day, because every time you have company, why don't we have coffee now and let's have some cake, and you're not going along with your wonderful hostess if you don't have a second cookie or something like that, you know? You're made to feel guilty or something like that, or that type of thing. And you also, it's a treat. How many times do you, if you're good, you'll get an ice cream cone later. I mean, everybody does it, I'm sure. We do it to ourselves. You know, we treat ourselves.
As a reward,
sure.
Or something.
Mm-hmm. You know, we had a hard day at work. First thing I'd do is go home after school and have peanut butter and jelly on toast because I love it. It's a treat. It's something that I can look forward to after I've had a rotten day or something.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I really think that sometimes we don't realize that it's established when we're really little, maybe. You know, as that type of a North American thing. Mm-hmm. And we were always told that you don't eat all your food on your plate. There's hungry children in China. You know, I mean, like, we were made to feel guilty if we didn't clean up our plate.
The Clean Plate Club.
Mm-hmm.
When you said that many people feel out of control in the presence of food, it reminded me of alcoholics, in a sense, is that there is, I think, a real definite for me that I have no control if it's available. So
yeah.
The illusion that there is no control.
Mm-hmm. That's one way to think about it. There's kind of a sort of a popular theory that perhaps this kind of disorder is surfacing more among females because it's more a way for them. It's an arena around which they can feel out of control. They do feel out of control, much like an alcoholic, which might be more of a male outlet. Food might be a more female outlet. I'm not sure that's true. I think it's not only feeling out of control, But for some women, it's the one place in their life where they're hoping they can exercise some control. That I may not be able to get straight A's all the time, and I may not be able to please mom and dad every minute, and I may not be able to impress my boss every day, but if I cannot binge today, I'm in control. So it has a reverse effect too. Or if I can get my weight down 10 pounds, then I'm in control. So I guess I shouldn't have said out of control, I just should have said control is the issue there.
When you said the thing about looking back in your family, I remember that I was from a big family, and it was like there was never seconds, and I always kind of wished there was a bit more. Everything was always done, it was all boys. So I remember going to college, and I couldn't believe that there was so much food there. You could go back for seconds and everything but meat, and I realized that I still have to work out my relationship to having more than enough. It's much easier for me to eat if it's all gone, and then I, you know, if there's none there, I can live really fine with that. I've worked out a way to live with that. It's hard for me to live with a lot.
There's bounty.
If there's bounty, yeah.
That's another thing that I learned about hospitality. Like you say, you're hospitable if you have something to offer, and that you never have, that the most hospitable person always has food left on the table. And I've always, you know, whenever I've hosted, always felt really bad that the serving dishes were empty at the end of the meal.
You hadn't provided enough.
Yeah. More than that. And in actuality, it was, you know, probably too much.
I don't know if I really see a relationship between what Jane and Janet said and what you've been talking about. But I've thought a lot about this too, because I'm a home economist, and I've thought a lot about the recent popularity. Well, it's been a long time trend in the health food type of thing, where people, especially women, are so concerned about types of foods that they're eating and serving their families lately, and will sort of jump on any bandwagon that they read, that honey is good and sugar is bad, without thinking about it twice. And I think it has to do a lot with the sex role stereotypes that you talked about, because food has been always a woman's realm, and we can feel like maybe we can't get a good job or the job we want or be in the career we want, but we can really take this nutritional information, right or wrong, and run with it and make our families wonderfully healthy. And I think that's related to their own diets too, because they're so concerned about nutrition and they spend so much more time thinking about varieties of food, because there's so much more now that we can eat than perhaps our parents had. And they, like Ray was saying, they didn't have to worry maybe about overweight, because there just wasn't enough to eat. If you had enough to keep you going, maybe they didn't have to worry so much about overweight in those days. And now we have such a bounty of it. And I think people are dieting all the time, and I think the more you diet, the more you think about food. Mm-hmm. It's easy for me to say, because I never had a weight problem, but I've never spent very much time thinking about food when I wasn't eating or planning a meal, but I know a lot of my friends do. Like you say, they think about it all the time. Mm-hmm.
Judy, when I go out of the village, I'm just amazed at the food business, up and down the streets, you know, all the fast foods and the blinking lights, and then how much, well, I was aware of this, we had some of Karen's relatives came over from Norway to spend about a month or 6 weeks with us, and they were amazed at how many restaurants we went to. They said in Norway you go out to a restaurant once a year, you know, and how much of our kind of entertainment centers around going out to food. And then another thing, like I think if you go to a foreign country, especially a third world country, and then step back and immediately go to a supermarket, the variety in the packaging and what's available to us, and I think we forget sometimes how our society is so food-centered, mm-hmm. isn't it? Just
yeah, it's
as entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
I think.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And at the same time, I've noticed that by just going to a magazine rack and looking at women's magazines, and almost every women's magazine will have recipes and and diet articles in both. Mm-hmm. Issues, mm-hmm. and you're supposed to be the good food preparer and nourish your family, and at the same time you're supposed to be very thin and not very thin. You're supposed to be whatever the vogue is, and right now it's pretty thin.
Mm-hmm.
That's a real dilemma.
But when we were talking the other day, you mentioned connections to compulsive behavior and achieving women, and that was ringing some bells for me.
Yeah.
I'd like to talk some more about that.
Okay. Did you have any thoughts about it?
Well, just I feel like I have all personally have been encouraged academically and professionally, and always felt like I had some burden there, and have become fairly compulsive about achieving. And I'm very compulsive about my eating, and I know those two are connected, but I don't know what the connectors are exactly, other than self-image tied up with both. How I look at myself and how I perceive that others look at me, what I think I should be, what I think is healthy. So, I don't know if I have any other connectors right now, but just the whole idea of being an overachiever and an overeater are connected for me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think for each person, how those connections get made are unique. But I think that striving for perfection, doing things right, often manifests itself in
mm-hmm.
in eating patterns that a person is trying to get control of it,
mm-hmm.
and their weight, their size. Did you have a thought?
Something that was triggered in my head. You were talking about being an overachiever. What's over about achieving? I'm too much of it. I did.
You did too much of it?
I won too many awards. I mean, I didn't have to win all those awards to prove myself to the world.
Did your parents put it on you, or did you think your parents did?
I thought my parents did. They didn't. I'm old enough now to realize they didn't, but I used to think they did.
Well, I teach, and it's amazing, though, the number of kids that are influenced by their parents, because you wouldn't think so anymore, but the kids that think they have to get straight A's plus, because if they don't, their mother won't think they're doing well enough in school, And that has,
I'm a little worried about that, too. I'm wondering why the culture seems to be seeing so much more of this kind of distress among people, what's promoting it. And I think the breaking down of the sexual stereotypes and barriers for women, saying to women now, supposedly, you can go ahead and achieve all you want, I think there's a real frightening aspect to that for women. I know there is for me. If I can really have what I want, and when I really start to go toward what I really want, sometimes I find that I eat funny, eat more and more funny the closer I get sometimes. And there's something real scary about that. And if we're pushing people toward this high achieving, the pressure may be popping out in a different way. I want to say a couple of things about fatness and thinness, those body images. When you think of fat for yourself, if you personally think about yourself fat, what do you think? What comes to your mind?
Holden.
Why'd you say that?
This is the biggest I've ever been. And I came here.
That's big, Mara.
Started gaining weight.
Why? Why do you think? Or how?
I'm not stressed. My meals are being fixed for me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have to worry about fixing my food. I sit down and I eat it. I'm more relaxed. I'm taking time to eat my meals at home. I would eat lunch at my desk. No breakfast ever. I still don't eat breakfast. Lunch at my desk. Two nights a week or three nights a week I had school, so I would fly by a McDonald's and pick up a hamburger and come home and drink a cup of tea and go to bed. And that was, you know, a lot of my eating patterns. I eat
probably
I eat more food here. Sometimes I don't know if I eat more healthier food, because at home I eat a lot of fruit, and if I wasn't going to eat a meal, I'd eat an orange or an apple or a banana or something like that for lunch. I don't know. Is that more healthy than eating?
But what you're saying in some ways is that your lifestyle is more easygoing here right now, and you've put on some weight too.
Mm-hmm. But are you thinking about food more? I mean, it doesn't sound like it's an issue of being obsessed with either place.
No, I'm not thinking about it. I don't think about food.
Yeah.
I mean, I eat when I was home. If I was really hungry, then I would eat. If I wasn't hungry, and I have a valve, which is kind of being, it's there. I can eat so much, and then it hits, and that's it. I don't care what's left on my plate. I can't finish it.
Mm-hmm.
And I never made a point of my kids to belong to this clean plate club, because I never wanted them to eat when they weren't hungry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Not a lot of people, I think, had that experience growing up.
My sister will say, I'm so full. And she gets over here, full. Oh, why are you still eating? Well, I want to finish this.
Mm-hmm.
I said, but you're full.
No. Mm-hmm. What about other people? What personal image comes to mind when you think of yourself as fat? Yourself fat.
Right now.
Getting older
right now.
older, the present.
No, I mean as I get older, I have to worry more about gaining weight.
Mm-hmm. So you would worry about it if that would happen?
No, I mean I already am. As I'm getting older, I've noticed that I don't know if your metabolism slows down and you get a middle age spread or something.
Mm-hmm.
So I never used to worry about fatness or weight before, but now in the last 5 years or so, I mean, I don't spend a lot of time worrying about it, but.
Yeah. I enjoyed getting overweight. Because
awesome.
I always, ever since I was very little, I always thought of myself as being small.
Mm-hmm.
And all the way through grade school, junior high, and high school, I was small. Size, you know, weight and height and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And once I began to gain weight and look more beefy and begin to see myself as a large person, I enjoyed that.
Do you consider yourself overweight now?
No.
Were you heavier before?
Yeah.
At one time?
How was that?
Pardon?
When you considered yourself overweight, was that that time when you felt glad to be thicker and beefier?
It became, instead of being glad about it, I became more conscious of how it was affecting me.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what I was able to do, it wasn't centered around food so much as the image I had of how active I could be.
Mm-hmm.
In running and in athletics and that kind of thing. And that was the motivation behind losing the weight, rather than
mm-hmm.
than dieting. I mean, mm-hmm. I combined a program of movement and physical activity with just starting to eat less, and the weight came
off. Right. So a new choice in your life about wanting to be more physically active. So
yeah, that was me.
Made that happen. I'd like to just propose that there's two ways to look at body image. The question about how do you personally, what images come to mind personally for you when you think of yourself as fat, and then the second question, what images come to mind when you think of yourself as thin, you probably would come up with different descriptions of yourself. Imagine yourself going to a party where there's a lot of people that you want to get to know, and imagine yourself fat and going to that party, or whatever you consider yourself fat, going to that party. Imagine yourself thin and going to that party. What would it be any different, and in what ways? I think if you did that for yourself, it might tell you a little bit about what concerns you have about body image. And let me just throw out some examples for you. For some of the women that I've talked to, they worry about their weight, and they diet, and they worry about their eating. And at the same time, they're very nervous about taking off the weight that they're trying to diet off. And their nervousness comes out when they begin to play around with the images of fat and thin and themselves in different situations, being fat or thin. Sometimes the fat feels like a protection against something that they don't want to have to handle, or they don't feel powerful enough to handle. Let me give you a true-to-life example I heard last week from one of the people in my group who said that when she was 11, she matured quickly. She entered puberty sort of before everybody else, and it turned out that her body developed very quickly, that her breasts became quite large for her body, for her age, and her hips became very curvy, and her waist became very narrow, and she had this hourglass figure at 11, and she was beginning to hear from the boys a lot of teasing, and she was beginning to hear from the girls, oh, he likes you because you look like that, and she was beginning to hear from older boys and men these kind of, well, you're going to be, or you really are, pretty interesting. She was 11 years old. She got really scared. She had no notion about how to handle that. So she discovered that as she started to eat a little more, she could put on some weight and straighten out those curves. And they weren't quite so noticeable. Then the comments turned to, you know, you really got to watch your eating. I mean, could you lose a few pounds? That she could handle a lot more easily and felt a lot more in control of than the other. That's an example where the fat really performed a function for her that was very important. What she needs to do now is move toward learning how to handle those kinds of things for herself, using her mouth to say the words that she needs to say to somebody around that, rather than putting food in order to cover, letting herself say no instead of the fat say no kind of thing. It provides a function for us, sometimes a real important one. The same with thin. Women who are anorexic women, for instance, will talk about how they're trying to straighten out those curves as well. So I think growing up into womanhood can be a real frightening thing for some women. I was going to say another thing about that. Oh, another thing, Janet, not to pick on you particularly, but sometimes women who are compulsive eaters and high achievers are, and I think I kind of fall into this category myself, that I view not being perfectly thin as an out for saying, don't expect me to be absolutely perfect. There's a reason why I slip up sometimes. If I'm as thin as I think I could be sometimes in the ideal, then I'm afraid that I have to be perfect in the world. I'm going to have to be smart. I'm going to be capable. I'm going to have to handle everything. At least I have a little edge on that. Now, do you understand that?
Mm-hmm.
So thin looks scary, I think, sometimes.
What goes along with that, though, is that the image is of the... that image of the perfect woman is thin and beautiful, and so if you are capable in other ways and you're thin and beautiful too, then maybe you are.
Then, yeah.
Pretty close to perfect, you know. Like, wow, what does that mean?
Right, what does that mean?
Then you're unlovable.
Okay.
That's not what that means. Mm-hmm.
There's no
sort of
higher category.
I can't find
him. Can't find him.
It's. And will people like? Will other people like you? I mean, if you're perfect, you know, what about other women? How are they going to treat you?
But sometimes isn't the perception that you have of yourself different from what other people have of you? You know, like sometimes if I think I'm too heavy, and I make a small statement at the table where I say, well, I shouldn't eat this, and then, oh, sure, Jane, you know, and I get, because if I gain 5 pounds, I have to take it off right now, you know what I mean? I don't usually gain weight, but if I do, it bothers me, because my clothes don't fit right. And if I even mention that, the other people just, it's like I'm insulting them, because they think of me as thin. I'm tall, I don't think I'm skinny, but they see me as, you know, being really tall, and I don't think I look the same to myself that I look to them. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. You think you look heavier?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. About that then, what, why do you think?
Because as soon as my clothes fit funny, I have to lose weight. And maybe it's only 5 pounds. Okay, and that to me, I feel the difference.
Mm-hmm.
When other people are maybe thinking about 15 or 20 pounds, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. I think it is. I always feel, too, that I should never say anything about my own weight, because I always feel that if there's somebody around that has a more of a weight problem, that it is an insult.
Yeah, and,
I mean,
and we're not...
them, that I would say, you know, something like, well, I need to get rid of my big stomach, then they obviously need to lose more weight, and it's an insult to them, so I try not to say anything.
Well... Yeah, because they're of their reactions to you. Were they not taking you seriously?
No.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think, though, I'll just throw this out as a possibility. I think any time we start to talk very much about, gee, my stomach shouldn't look like this, my thighs would be better if they look like that, we're playing into some of those stereotypes that we all hold about females.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about females right now. There's some discomfort about our body. And when it doesn't quite look the way we want it, then we get preoccupied by it. And it's the preoccupation that I'm saying, there's something funny about having that.
Yeah.
I'm always amazed, you know, when I'm with men, we tend to talk too much about cars and cameras and stereos, but so when I'm listening on women, I think a lot of the talk is on how I look in the body and gaining weight or losing weight.
Mm-hmm.
Is it? It's...
Mm-hmm.
I just don't remember that much talking with men about that. About my body.
Right. I think that's the sexism.
What?
I don't.
What?
No.
No.
You don't?
No.
You what?
I don't think women talk about food a lot.
No, I'm not talking about food, but about losing weight or diets or gaining or what.
But I find when people are on a diet, that's when they talk about all that.
Mm-hmm.
I do.
That's right. If you're on a diet, you think about food all the time. And if you're not on a diet, you don't think about it. At least that's what I believe. In some ways, diets are the worst enemy of losing weight, because that's all you can think about is... what you can eat.
Yeah, let me talk about that for a minute. I've been reading a real interesting book that I would like to suggest to you, called Fat is a Feminist Issue, and it's written by Susie Orbach, and she's done a lot of work with women, in particular, about food. And as I read that, and as I've been thinking about it in the last couple days, I think that one thing that I hear over... Or I think the one thing that's implied about ourselves, our shapes, and food is that they become evil. They become the enemy. Our body, my body's my enemy. Food is an enemy. It's a demon. And one thing that Orbach tries to do in her book is say, what if we looked at food, she says it's for what it is, as a pleasurable thing that we're given to sustain life. And Ray went to hear Dan talk today about Eucharist, and remembered the story about manna and how food was there for people to eat enough of. And, you know, what if we began to see food that way, rather than be afraid of it? I think the fear has to be faced. And it would be real informative to know what the fear is. But I think on the other side of that can be a look at food as a pleasurable thing. Diets imply that it's an evil thing, and we need to fight against it. Our bodies are bad. We need to deprive it and punish it into shape. What if our bodies are there for pleasure? What if food is there for pleasure? I think the fear then is that I'll eat myself to death then. I mean, I'll see all this wonderful food and I'll eat it and I'll blow up and explode. And I think we don't. I think it's like crying when we're extremely sad and we say, I can't start crying. If I cry now, I'll cry forever. Well, we end up not crying forever, and it's the same way with food. I think if it takes a while to get to that point, but I think that once we begin to really believe that food is there for us, then we can begin to say, and therefore everyone should have it. Everyone should have good food. Everyone should have as much as they need, and that kind of thing, and we can come out of a clear sense of it because we believe it for ourselves. It's a little sermon. I'd like to ask you how it is eating here at Holden. I guess that was the thing that really triggered me when I walked in the door. It was, what's it like? Food is all out there. There's all plenty. What's it like?
I always gain weight when I come here. I'm just hungry all the time. When I'm home, I'm never hungry.
You experience hunger here.
Pardon me?
You experience hunger here. What about other people? This might be a very personal question. I don't know. And it's no implication on the cook about whether, right? About whether the food's tasty or not.
It's hard to miss a meal, not because I'm hungry, but because that's a gathering point for fellowship. It's a time when the community gathers together. It's a time when people relax and talk and where friendships grow. Mm. So to miss a meal and not spend that time alone is kind of a double shot. In essence, first you miss the food and the enjoyment of the food, which I enjoy. Plus you miss being with the other people.
So you either have the choice of being social and eating or being by yourself.
Mm-hmm. Well, there are other choices, but it takes a lot more work to bring a group of people together who want to not eat
and
be together.
Mm-hmm.
That's rare.
Mm-hmm. That's a common link in people's family histories, and that link doesn't always have to be. Often in this culture, we think that socializing and eating go together, and I think if we can begin to separate those, we might be a little more clear about when we're really hungry, when we want to eat, when we want to be social.
In the winter community, going to meals is virtually the only way you can find out what's going on, unless you go up to look at the calendar on the podium. In the summer, it's not true because the schedule is posted outside.
So you don't have to go.
But if you miss a meal, unless you stop and ask somebody what was announced, you may not know what's happening that afternoon.
So it's not even only social; it's informative about your daily. Yeah. It's quite a link. What do you think about that?
Well, I for a couple of reasons, a Lenten discipline, and also because I'm working on a deadline, I didn't go to meals today, and I was very angry about that because I didn't know what was happening in the community, and I realized that, you know, it's up to me to do something about that in the sense of going to look at the schedule or asking, but it really is a kind of separation from the community when you do it for even good reasons.
Mm-hmm.
It is very distancing.
Mm-hmm.
At least I experience it so.
Mm-hmm. Dan, you want to say something?
Yeah, I find I have to discipline myself because there's always about 10 minutes between when I could finish eating and announcements. And then that 10-minute period, it's just easy to keep eating. just to fill in the time. Does anybody else?
Oh, it's not that you're hungry anymore.
No, I know I've had enough. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think the other thing, I know I felt this when I first came, and I don't feel it so much anymore, but I feel really rushed to eat. Mm-hmm. It's like, mm-hmm. you only have this much time. Mm-hmm. And I think I eat more, too, because of it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I find myself eating faster and faster.
So that's just the opposite of what Dan said. He has too much time. Mm-hmm.
I found myself thinking a couple times at meals here at Holden, now I better make sure I eat enough, because it's not like at home where you can go and if you get hungry in between meals, you can get something.
So you don't have food accessible to you to when you're hungry,
mm-hmm.
when you yourself are hungry.
Mm-hmm. I find the most the most difficult days for me are like tomorrow, when all that food is all out there. I've been in enough solitude days that I discipline myself to take the food home with me tonight, what I'll eat tomorrow, that I don't go over there and see all that, because I just lose control. And that's 1 year's time of control.
Yeah.
Just as overwhelming to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, overwhelming. It's
like, mm-hmm. Yeah, I usually eat less on solitude days,
mm-hmm.
because I just go over when I am hungry and eat until I'm not hungry, and there's no social aspect at all to the meals tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
So really, that's really primary for me,
mm-hmm.
is the social aspect. If people weren't there, well, a lot has to do with how I'm feeling too. Because
mm-hmm.
if I'm alone and I'm depressed, I want to fill myself up so that I don't feel as empty.
Mm-hmm.
And that's real key for me too.
So it meets an emotional need there, no?
Yeah, but that's, again, it's so tied in with other people.
Mm-hmm.
Because if the other people are around, then even if I'm emotionally down, I don't eat as much, because there's that possibility, there's that fellowship,
mm-hmm.
people around.
Mm-hmm.
The chance of that emotional need being met. Yeah, it's strange.
Orbach talks in her book the difference between stomach hunger, knowing when your stomach is hungry, and when there's a need hunger, an emotional need, an informational need, a social need, that the food is also meeting. And that I think if meals are structured, let me see how I'm going to say this. If a person can determine where the food is going to be and what it's going to be and when it's going to be eaten on the basis of the stomach hunger, then my guess is that not everybody would then be eating in the same way, the same food at the same time. And so I think this kind of living arrangement would probably, it'd have to pay real close attention to when you know, you're saying, I eat fast and then I end up eating more than I wanted, you know, feeling rushed, and you feeling like I'm eating more because I have time to kill. And it's like, where are the signals that are going on inside our body saying, well, this has been plenty.
Mm-hmm.
Now, stop. What's it, the other side of the question for me is, what's it like to prepare food here at Holden? A lot of people here are involved in the cooking of it. I'm not just thinking of you, Jesse, but you're obviously one of, you know, it's been around food a lot.
Well, for me, because I get to see a lot of people and people's relationship to food. And like even right now as we're sitting here, I could just feel myself, even about 15 minutes into the session, I could just tell my body temperature increasing and I was getting really angry. Because, and I've thought about this a lot of times, when I see not only how much people eat, but with what aggressive behavior we eat, and we call ourselves a Christian community. And I question that, and I just am appalled, and part of the anger is because I feel that in myself, too. I mean, I feel this aggressive towards food, because I love food. I love it.
Rushing up to the counter and getting in line and...
Yeah, and the amounts that people take. And
And the thing that saddens me and makes me most angry is because I think if we here at Holden, I mean, I'm not saying Holden's perfect, but, you know, if we can't get ourselves together to organize, not organize, but, you know, to have some sort of control on what food means to us, I mean, how do we expect the rest of the world to get themselves organized, you know, and be willing to share if we're not willing to? And we are not.
That's the guilt. I mean, that just pushes me further down into my problem.
Well,
I can't solve the world. I can't solve my problem. I can't solve the world's
I know, problem. But what I'm saying for me is that I think, for me, I need to see that relationship with the world, and I need to say, look, you're not going to solve the world's problem, but you have to start with yourself. And that's where the anger comes in, because first of all, I experience a lot of anger when I look at the community, and then I go, Jesse, you're part of it. You might as well just, you know, be beating yourself up, because, you know, why get so angry at all these people? You do the same thing all the time.
You get angry in association with the food part of it, not with the rest of it, or do you know?
What?
You said you get angry with food.
Well, I get angry with...
To do with food, with how they become...
Yeah, with just the way we don't...
Eating habits or something?
Yeah, we don't... I mean, I love to enjoy food, and it's a pleasurable experience, and I know that it's nourishment for me, and... But there's a way to do that that's healthy, and there's a way to do that that's unhealthy, and I think a lot of times we do it unhealthily here, and it makes me mad. Okay. Hold it. I think I can get my temperature down. But then
I found that during Lent I purposely am making myself slow down eating because I found I was eating too fast. And I find I have to take just a certain amount of food, and I say, okay, you must make this last a half an hour till announcements. Because I was not happy with myself because I was eating more than my body needed. And it just wasn't eating for the pleasure of eating. It was just eating, and I never ate like that before. I was really disappointed in myself that my eating patterns were changing. I didn't even taste the food. I was just, it was just going down.
You're talking about the way we eat now, not just how much we eat. Right? It makes me smile. It's a little bit personal, but every once in a while when you and I will sit down and eat, I can think of times where, I mean, it usually comes up for me too, like your eating just really upsets me, you know, and there's something just either that's going on with me or that's going on with you or that's going on between you, and you can just kind of feel that aggression there, and it's like, and then I sit there and I don't want to say anything about that. You reminded me of that when you said that. There's a certain style that you can kind of feel. It's sort of a mindless, distressed sort of thing, and part of me feels we're caring, like, what's going on, or let's take a look at this. And
the bad part of it is when I don't act, when I don't say something to let that anger out,
right, you can
feel
it.
I end up starting to expect that. In the summertime, I expect people to be pigs. I expect nothing more than pigotry out of them. So I just, then I get...
So you're offended by the people not really understanding what it is that they're doing, what they're taking in, what this is.
What's the purpose of eating?
And that they're not really appreciating the fact that they have enough to eat and they can't maybe do it.
Well, they don't, I don't know, yeah. Because they do have enough to eat, but people don't realize that. I don't realize that. I mean, I even...
But I think in the summer, it's like... I experience that as more borderline, like enough. I mean that people, it's enough to eat, but that people don't feel like it's enough compared to what they eat at home.
Right.
And that there's a group of people that they have to share with for maybe the first time.
Eight people.
That's scary.
I think is a difference.
Yeah. Panic.
And I know when I was a waitress last summer, I mean, it was like, sometimes it was really borderline. Chicken night was insane. I mean, that was the one night where I said, you can have this job.
Yeah, I think it's sort of, you know, the personal is political kind of thing. It's how do we understand our own, what's going on for us and why we are the way we are and what our history has been and what's all wrapped up in our eating and our food and our body image, and then how that's going to inform what we do in the larger. And you sort of have both. You get to sort of see it from both angles as in your job. I'm reminded of something that Mary said today in her talk on peacemaking and how as peacemakers in the world we go forward with love. We move out of that stance. We're not passive. And so that may mean loving our enemy. And I think about people who see food as an enemy, as the enemy, as the evil, as the demon. And how do we turn that around to love that thing and ourselves as eaters?
Is there a way to love it and still not abuse it? I mean, there's a point where it's not healthy.
It's a little after 9, so I think we should end, but I would like to recommend Orbach's book to you, Fat is a Feminist Issue, because she talks about some very radical things about how to approach changing forever some of the problems that people have around eating, but it's not, doesn't have anything to do with dieting. It has a lot to do with understanding the kinds of things we're talking about, our relationship to ourselves and to what's going on in our lives, and when we feel out of control around food, what else is out of control for ourselves, and the body image thing for women in particular, and how we can begin to see food as a pleasurable thing, and that we won't go crazy if we have all we want, because probably we'll begin to learn what is really enough, and there will be enough to go around, and it will be good. I think it's a real loving approach to the body and to the person and to the food, as opposed to a deprivation model and a punishment kind of idea. So I'd really recommend that to you. And I'll put this in. She runs groups, and she has figured out how to run a self-help group for people who want to talk about their eating and their weight, and outlines the group in the book. So if you here, for instance, would ever want to get together and do some group exercises around food, or have the community even do it. She gives examples of exercises.
I have 2 copies of that book.
Great. Have you read it?
Yeah.
Do you like it?
Yeah. I read it one time. I didn't agree with it at all, but I've changed.
I want to look at it again.
Yeah.
Did you have a thought?
I have a question. I guess I've been on some kind of extended trips with people, like in backpacking and stuff, and I've never seen people be so aggressive and so impatient and irrational, myself included, when we got hungry. Something happens. It's an amazing thing. Everything else is forgotten. People, things that need to be done. If you care about someone, that just gets pushed right aside. Does that have to do with that we feel hungry so little that when the feeling does come, it just overpowers us? Or there's a tremendous amount of power and energy that goes into that. I'm just immediately directed toward, I got to get this taken care of, or I'm going to die. No, it isn't. I'm not going to die. But
you know what it would be for me? I'd be out in a place I was a little afraid of, and I would want myself to be as comfortable as possible, and if I had a need to know that I was secure and I didn't know how to get it met out there or with the people I was with, I'd sure opt to eat, because at least I'd feel secure for a little while.
That's also a reward, too, on a hiking kind of thing for me. Oh, I've worked so hard, now I really deserve.
Mm-hmm. These other people better recognize they deserve it.
Yeah, right.
I think that's just an example of how I think it's individual why people do what they do. Judy, are you talking about, as a counselor, are you talking about this as you mentioned, the 2 diseases? Is this a pathology, or is this a symptom to some other greater disorder? Is this a sign of hope, maybe, that people can come in and
then begin to explore and challenge their reaction to the world around them, or attempts to take control, or attempts to understand themselves, or are they? I'm just wondering how they do. They come in. Is this specifically the obsession, or is are there some greater obsession, some other areas of lack of control, discomfort in living, or whatever?
I think it's a symptom. I think it's a behavior that's been learned and adopted. I think it can become so chronic that the behavior itself is the thing that might have to be changed before the other things can be looked at, if it's extreme, health and life threatening. But short of that, I think it's more of a symptom of all the kinds of things we're talking about, achievement and sexuality and filling needs, all those things.
So for people's ability to look at this as being an obsession and maybe a behavior that they'd like to confront is a sign of hope, then they're able to explore some other things in themselves.
Yeah. I think so. I don't think people come in thinking that's what they're going to do. but I think, yeah, it's hopeful that I'm glad they're coming in. I don't feel pleased that it's so prevalent. I think that's a sign, points to some societal problem.
Doesn't that have some stuff to do with the fitness craze that's on right now? I mean, the whole thing. Pardon me?
I think it just plays in.
You know, like, the whole thing is not only fitness now, but how you look when you're
fit.
You know, 49 pairs of socks and the swimming suit type of garb. You know what I mean? Like, fashion has now hit the fitness thing. And it's cool to be, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And it has to do with more our other problems as well. Mm.
Do you think, Judy, that it's a quite recent problem?
I don't think compulsions around eating is recent, but I think the severity of some of what we're seeing, mm-hmm. it seems to be more recent, and I think it has to do with something that's going on right now in our culture that would be real good to come to understand so we could change
that. Do you think
that
we don't have any problems that are really important, so these kinds of things come?
Not at all. I think it has to do with, like I said, the breaking down of some of the sexism in our culture and women having to learn what it means to break some of that down and face some of those things. And I think it could, I don't know, you know, I could get real crazy about it and say, and it could also be a push, pushing women the other direction so they're still in trouble. I don't, you know, that's a paranoid way to think about it, but I think that there's some real societal things going on that's making this kind of thing surface.
I think one of those would be the whole business of violence in our culture. And what you said in response to the camping trip for the whole week. Thing of trying to be secure, of finding security in a world that seems increasingly gone mad.
Yeah.
You know, in just so many different ways.
Control.
Well, it's not even control as much as it's security. As much as it's just trying to find a comfortable and a safe place. And something that represents comfort and security. Who does that?
Mm-hmm.
Well,
right.
What I was meaning is that's one area I can control. I can't control if somebody's going to rape me or attack me, but I can control my food. This is something I'm in charge of.
Because
It seemed when I was working with students, increasingly that was the issue.
Mm-hmm.
My parents, you know, control me in so many ways, but I can control them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had one woman whose mother, I was trying to get her to eat a lot, and she just wouldn't. And then she would, after everybody had gone to bed at night, would go down in the refrigerator and eat because she was hungry.
Yeah.
But she was in control, charge of when she was eating and what she was eating. So that's a different kind of thing. But yeah, I think that security, that need for some comfort in all the strain, I think can be provided by. It seems like we should stop, doesn't it? Because don't we have to go down?
The
we have to say all we can say right now, that's the thing.
Right.
Well, I'd like to say a lot of things.
Well, yeah.